Okay, so we're starting the fourth shiur now, Mor Nevuchim. And last week, we began to discuss the Rambam's mission to rid anthropomorphism from the Jewish people. And somewhat successful, actually, in many ways. we'll get to that a little momentarily. And one of the things that we saw here is that the Rambam's agenda, again, is twofold. One hand, it's to reconcile reason and revelation. On the one hand, it's to reconcile reason and revelation. At the same time, it's also to address sort of the broader issue of the fact that a lot of people out there in the Jewish world are believing things that atheists is apikorsis, and we got to deal with this issue. Okay, so on the one you could say it's dealing with rationalism, on the other you could say it's dealing with mysticism, right? Various forms or another. Now, one of the things that I think we discussed, just mentioned again, is that it's very clear that the Rambam is not dealing with the theoretical. Right? There are people who clearly he has a mind, who believe in this, and the obvious pasuk which gets him going, right, is the Tzelem Elokim, Nasadam Etzalmenu Kidmutenu, right, which is the first one, but there are many other passages which certainly seem to imply. And one of the broader questions that comes up is, well, who exactly did believe that God has some form of corporeality? Huh?
Rabag.
We'll get to, I'm not sure Rabag, I won't put Rabag in that category. It's an interesting question. Now, it's a question which has only really been sort of, let's say only, but has been rethought or rediscussed in the recent sort of past couple of decades, because for many, many centuries, quite frankly, the Rambam's writings on this issue were so dominant that it wasn't only that you're an apikoros, right, if you believe it, it's also that, or it's how could you think that anyone actually did believe such a thing? Now, if you actually read the Mor Nevuchim, you see here the Rambam knows there are people who think such things. Now, you can always say, yeah, but those are the amaratzim, the stupid people ever might be. And there's no doubt the Rambam thinks a lot of stupid people believe this. And I think I showed you, we'll get this later on, 135, 136, the Rambam says that, whereas I can excuse the Amoratzim for believing and not understanding other things, when it comes to God having a body, there's no excuse. There's no excuse. This is something which is easily comprehensible to everyone. Otherwise, it violates his infinitude, as he puts it. Now, the question is whether this is right, meaning what is the story in the history of Jewish thought? Okay? But keep in mind that people that are interested in Jewish history in the 19th and 20th centuries, right, were usually uber rationalist, right, or serious rationalist, and they had no interest in Chazal being anthropomorphist, and they had no interest in other Rishonim, and therefore they're not looking for this whatsoever. Right? The recent recent sort of decades has been a re-examination of this question, which, truth be told, if you're reading it honestly, it's clear that Rambam's spending a lot of time on this because he knows it's a factor. Now, you don't have to look far, of course, to know the fact that there's such people believe in it, and they're not just Amei Aretz, because when the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, right, I think we discussed this last time, but I'll mention this again, and the Rambam Hilchot Tshuva tells us anyone who believes a guy has a body is what? Is Hilchot Tshuva rather? Anyone who believes a guy has a body is a heretic, right? This is a problem. Now, again, the reason why the Rambam says this, and we'll see this a little more, is because the Rambam feels like if you believe that God has a body, you don't believe in God. Because you have just a total misconception of what God is. And he's going to tell us, and we'll see this, if you're in the Ovid of Avodah Zarah, you might believe in God, just think that this pestle, whatever it might be, extreme example, is intermediary. If you think God has some form of corporeality, you just don't believe in God. You just have a misdefinition, right? In other words, if I say I believe in the existence of dinosaurs, okay, but I think a dinosaur is a type of computer, well, then I just know what I'm talking about, right? There's just different types of species here, okay? So, yeah.
there are a lot of people that thought that God had some influence over reality. Huh? I feel like nowadays, I don't know if that's as widespread for me. Even among the people who are conversing and outright.
Good. So that's precisely what we're trying to address right now. Yeah, that's what I saw. I'm interested in it. That's the question at hand here. And in the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah Aleph Chet, Harim Mefurash B'Torah Neviim She'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Guf U'Gviya She'ne'amar Kishem Hu Elohim B'Shemayim Me'av Al Arz Mitachat V'Guf Lo Yeh B'Shnei Mekomot. Physicality always has some form of division. Okay. What do you do about the fact that it says Etzba Elohim Yad Hashem Einei Hashem, right? All Eznei Hashem. So he says here, right, this is a very nice summary, like he's doing the shackles interpretation here. So he tells us, right, Hakol lefi datam shem le'adam hu she'ena mikir melagufo v'dibra Torah kaloshem b'nei adam. Yeah, we're going to come to that momentarily. All right? Now, later on, in Hilchot, this is in Hilchot Yisrael HaTorah, the Rambam says this. In Hilchot Tshuva, the Rambam, I think it's Paragim, if I'm not mistaken here, I need a version of the right rivet. If you have it here. Oh, yeah. So in 3:7, Gimel Zayin. So the Rambam says that Omer Sheisham Ribon Echad, Aval Shul Guf Ubal Tmuna, right? That is one of the people who are in the category of Minim. Okay, it is very bad to be a mean. Okay, so yeah, if you take a look now, listen to the lashon of the rabbi here. Marvah, the lama karal is a mean. How can you say such a person is apostate? Right? Ukama gdoli, utovim imenu halchu bezu hamachshava lefi masheru b'mikrot v'yoter masheru b'divrei agadot v'hamishabshot et adelt. This is interesting. What's the rabbi saying here? How would you call such people a mean? Why?
He's calling your predecessors.
They are greater people, greater than you, who believe in such things based on either the Tanakh or Agata, which he says are Meshabshot at Adel, which he says, right? Confuse people. Meaning, he's not disagreeing with the Rambam, he's just saying that.
It's not
fear. That's that, it's not fear. You're not a mean, but you're right. Okay? Now, what this is clear testimony to the fact is that there are many people, gedolim, right, who believe in some form of corporeality of God. Now, if you look, I'm sorry? Hey, it's time for the Ravid. The Ravid's time period. I'm saying the Ravid's time period. Now, there's no doubt, there's no doubt, but it seems clear that there's more of a phenomenon of anthropomorphism, at least alleged. Usually people think about this as an Ashkenazic phenomenon. And there is the Balei Tosfos, Sefer Chassidim, there is that group. The question is this totally fair? But we know, for example, and when the Ramban writes in his famous letter against the whole Maimonidean controversy, so he makes a reference to the fact that there are people, these anti-Maimonideans in Ashkenaz and Provence are going after him, include within that school, right, people believe in God's corporeality. God has corporeality. Okay? And there are many other similar allegations made as well. Now the question is, how true is this? So there's been, a few, like I said, decades, a couple of serious research on the past 10, 15 years, serious research on the topic. And this is sort of twofold. Threefold. First of all, there's no doubt that there's a safer, a mystical work called the Shir Koma, of who knows origins, some of mystical origins, which, as you can tell by the title, is sort of a description, detailed, of God's body, in many forms or another. And it's, I think, fair to say it's the most anthropomorphic work in the Jewish heritage. Now, it really doesn't seem so. Yeah, no, it doesn't seem to be that way. It's called the Shir Koma. It does not seem to be that way. And there's no doubt that this work had some form of influence throughout the ages, although its origins And what its relationship is to Chazal and Bali Mesora is a matter of uncertainty and much speculation.
Do you know when it emerged?
I don't remember offhand when it emerged, but it's definitely around and being discussed by Rishonim. It's early, though. It's early.
So where did it kind of fall out of?
The question is whether it fell out. I mean, and on the mystical level, it's certainly supplanted by Kabbalah. So its influence certainly waned. Now the question is whether Shir Koma and other works had influenced later mystical, phenomena in Judaism. Okay. Now, there's no doubt there. Now, what about in Chazal? Meaning, for example, when the Gemara in Brachos, I think Daf Zayin, if I'm not mistaken, talks about Hashem showing Moshe how he puts on his tefillin or whatever it might be. Now, again, the Rambam is going to tell you, of course, that this is what?
Allegorical,
whatever it might be. There's a little bit of a discussion about whether you really can say this accurately. In other words, again, in the rabbinic world, people assume the Rambam's correct. In the world of historians, there's a sort of a raging debate on this issue. About that there seem to be some passages which seem to be a stretch to interpret allegorically, whatever it might be. And more recently, again, it's hard to say. Meaning,
there's also other ways you can translate it, like meaning
Yeah, 100%. You're my Manidean this way, and there are many people influenced by it, and I'd be very happy if all that's true. I'm just mentioning to you, in the academic world, there are certainly people who don't feel that way. Okay? Now, some are real extremists on the issue. There's one guy who's a real extremist, but this is a book called Out There by someone named Yair Leuerbaum. It's a book called Tzelem Elohim. And interesting work. Anyway, he discusses this and discusses the various passages, which admittedly sometimes are, it seems like they're talking about thinking of God in corporeal terms. But again, I think in the rabbinic world, people are very, very hesitant at such interpretations. And, you can go with that. But it seems to be clear that they're definitely Rishonim, and then in defense of these Rishonim, right? You can say who thought that that God is some form of corporeality. I have an article here. I'm putting a few articles about this right now by somebody named Ephraim Kannerfogel, who's a professor at YU. He used to be Shulrav also in Tinek. I don't know if some of you know him here. Okay, you're sure. Okay, good. So anyway, so here's a book article called Varieties of Belief in Medieval Ashkenaz, The Case of Anthropomorphism. And one of the things actually that Kannerfogel tries to do here is debunk the myth that all the Ashkenazim are a bunch of, no philosophical sophistication, just believe God has some form of corporeality. In fact, he shows many. You can see this in the parish of the Bechor HaShor, for example, to Breshit, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chavav, right? Das Adam, Bezalmenik, Mutenu, and other passages where they affirm, perhaps on the influence of Rambam, perhaps on the influence of others, that God does not have some corporeality. But there is no doubt that there are those who felt that God has some form of corporeality, the most famous of which is somebody named Moshe Taku, the Balei Tosfot, who he has an interesting position. See, there's a problem. I mean, what's the problem that's bothering everyone? The psukim seem to imply that, and these images of prophecy and whatnot also seem to imply. Whereas, what is this experience people had? Okay? Now, the Rambam thinks that this is sort of the image they see in their prophecy. Okay? There's no actual real thing. Now, Rav Saadia Gaon and others have a little bit of a more moderate version of that, where they say, well, there's some form of notion of the kavod of Hashem, which can manifest itself.
I think there's different names of Hashem as well. There's Shekhinah, which is the thing that is manifest in this world, and there's...
Yes, so the Rambam doesn't go with that. We're going to see as we go along here, the Rambam is going to interpret all these concepts, and he just doesn't have that as any form of manifestations. Okay? This is all a dream. This is all an image. Okay? Now, Rav Moshe Taku, you see, he has sort of some form of a notion where he basically says, well, God doesn't have a permanent form, but God can appear in various different forms and shapes and et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And that's what's going on in these prophetic visions, right? God sort of appearing in such a type of form. Okay? Now, the Rambam makes mention of a different type, which seems to have existed, in which people don't think that God has some form of real flesh. Right, remember this? The Rambam says in 1:1, that real flesh is bigger, he's more splendid, but he says some form of corporeality, which also seems to have been out there. Okay? And again, you don't have to go far to see that there were people that seemed to believe in some form of corporeality of God, which the Rambam adamantly rejects. Right? And then he and the Ravid have a discussion whether the person is considered to be a heretic or not. Now, you might be familiar with the fact also that in recent years, there have been various articles written whether Rashi was a corporealist. You might have seen this in Chakira. There's a whole thing with the Zoo Rabbi, Nassim Slifkin, where he sort of went through everyone else's old claims, gives new claims, think that why he is, and there's a vehement response to it. Occasionally you see people talk about the Rashabah, maybe. I don't know. Again, all of these are a bit speculative about these interpretations. I'm not convinced in any of them there's any smoking guns, to say the least. But again, you know, it's, between the Ravid and frankly what the Rambam tells us here, it is clear that there are people out there who just, you know, sort of think that the guy's corporeality. Now, the question is, how did they go wrong? Meaning, how did this happen? Okay? So the Rambam tells us in 1.5 partly how this happens. And this is, you guys see this 1.5? This is a very interesting passage here. The Rambam tells us, when the chief of the philosophers began to investigate very obscure matters, right, he excused himself by making a statement, the meaning of which was as follows. A student of his books, yeah, this is a reference by the Aristotle, okay? That's the chief of the philosophers. A student of his books should not, because of the subject of these researches, ascribe to him effrontery, temerity, and excessive haste, but rather he should ascribe to him the desire and endeavor to acquire and achieve true beliefs to the extent to which this is in the power of man. In the same way we say that man should not hasten too much to accede to this great and sublime matter the first try. Meaning, when you want to do this properly, right, you gotta be thoughtful, you gotta be go step by step. There are no shortcuts in the realm of philosophy. And indeed, this is part of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, who of course was a great philosopher. Now, as you can see in the Torah, he's philosophizing all the time, right? Just like Avraham Avinu, right? This classic philosopher move. Right? They turn every philosopher into every biblical figure into a philosopher, right? The shepherds, what they're doing out there. Well, he's listening to iTunes all day, you know what I'm saying? They're listening to TED lectures, you know what I'm saying? Right? So he says, when doing this, he should not make categoric affirmations in favor of the first opinion that occurs to him, and should not from the outset strain and impose thoughts with the apprehension of the deity. In other words, you shouldn't just say, what's going on here? Oh, this must be it. Boom. No, you got to think it through. You got to analyze it. The first thought is, you know, is rarely correct. Okay? It is in this sense, and Moses hid his face for he was afraid to look upon God. What's that referring to? The snap, right? What does it mean? This being an additional meaning of the verse over and above its external meaning that indicates that he hid his face because he was being afraid to look upon the light manifesting itself. And now that the deity who was greatly exalted upon every deficiency can be apprehended by the eyes. Now, it sort of sounds like Moshe thinks like he's seeing God here. And what's Rambam saying? No, he's not seeing God. What it means is that he's pushing aside this blast of thought of what divinity is to think about and contemplate and really philosophically understand it properly. Moshe, by the way, is one of the greatest philosophers we're going to see coming up. Right? And who made the mistake, though, however, of being too quick, too over hasty in their alleged apprehension of God? The Zakenim. Zakenim, Baruch of Da'ot of Shemot. The nobles of the children of Israel, on the other hand, were over hasty, strained their thoughts, and achieved apprehension. And that's why they think they see, right? What's it say there?
Ran up the mountain, or?
Right, no, before you're in the mountain, right? Remember, they see that they think they have the light that they're seeing, all sorts of things there, right? Stones, right? So he says, this is just, this is very interesting. This wasn't actually what they saw, it's what they thought they saw. It's the Torah's recording to us. Who's got a pardon? Huh?
Get used to it.
Like there is when the Rambam. Well, I mean, again, it's a huge question to a certain extent. Other extent is like, well, what is going on there? Right. That's one of those.
The words
do. Right. No, that's one of those psukka. You know, those psukka. But
24.
24. What? 10. Vayiru. Vishimu said, Vayiru. et Elohei Yisrael v'tachar. Look at the pasuk here.
Vayiru
et Elohei Yisrael v'tachar raglav k'maser livnat ha-sapiruch etzem ha-shamayim la-Torah. And by the way, how do you know that they were intellectually slothful? Because what do they do afterwards? Pasuk Yud Aleph. They're eating and drinking. Which of course, the Rambam, as we'll see, is that's just something you should be doing for necessity. Eating and drinking as they're being philosophical investigation is like contradictory to each other. Pasha, I understand. The Rambam knows those speaking very well. What the Rambam is saying is that's just further proof of their intellectual slothfulness. Again, you like it, you don't like it, whatever it might be. And of course, there's no, when he says that Vayiru doesn't mean they actually saw him. Vayiru is talking about intellectual comprehension. Apprehension. Okay? So now, intellectual slothfulness is what leads to such beliefs, right? And then you get to...
slothfulness is eating and drinking.
Huh?
According to him,
No, the intellectual flaws are intellectual slothfulness. But how do you know they're intellectually slothful? Because anyone who's intellectually serious would be, you know, wouldn't be eating and drinking at that moment. Okay, that was in 1.5. Now, I also told you, see, there's a whole bunch of chapters here where they, you know, he gives these interpretations. 1.17 we mentioned previously about the importance of esotericism in general. And then let's take a look at 1.25. 126. Sorry. Kobe's good, man. Kobe's like, you didn't tell me this? He keeps me on straight and narrow. Okay. Now here, we saw what we saw in the Rambam already in Hilchot Yisod HaTorah. By the way, Hilchot Yisod HaTorah gives us a nice brief summary of a lot of the issues here. Now, one of the things you have to ask yourself is, if you have Hilchot Yisod HaTorah, why does the Rambam have to write like in the long form here?
Which one did he write first?
Mishnah Torah.
Right.
Okay. Now, he makes reference to Mishnah Torah here.
Right.
Okay. Now, 126, the Rambam tells us, what's going on here? He's been 25 chapters, and there's all this allegorical interpretation. Well, what was the Torah doing? You know, their dictum that refers in inclusive fashion to all kinds of interpretation connected with the subject, namely they're saying, the Torah speak in the language of the sons of man. The meaning of this is that everything that all men are capable of understanding and representing to themselves at first thought has been ascribed to him as necessarily belonging to God and may be exalted. In other words, what's he saying here? This is precisely the fifth method of educational technique, contradictions, which we talked about in the introduction, where basically we're throwing out the ideas, getting people familiarizing with them, and therefore, there are certain ideas that indicate a corporeality, which is precisely what Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam meant. The Torah teaches a manner of giving God corporal attributes in order to sort of introduce the notion, right, of what it means to be God, which, of course, once people move beyond their juvenile theology, so they'll be able to knock that out of their head. Okay, now this is how he used Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam. And by the way, he quotes the notion of Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam in a number of different places. I have it here 125. You can see it here in 133, where he gets into this again, the educational process. We'll see that next week. You can see that in 159, if I'm not mistaken. I wrote down here in a second. You want to be at 159, right? Section 1, chapter 59. Yeah. Okay, where he also talks about Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam in 153, he has it. I mean, the Rambam likes this notion of Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam. Right? Because he uses it every time he wants to talk about analogies, right, allegories, whatever it might be. Now, it's very interesting. What does the term Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Bnei Adam mean in Chazal?
You can darshan extra things in Sukkim.
So you don't darshan.
Right. So right.
Meaning there are those who darshan...
Call codes for codes.
Let's say?
Like every letter.
Give me a pasuk that has like a double...
We have... Chavir v'chavir dimecha. So the second et is... Going to Rabbi Kiva...
Yeah, but even better, it's like... Hashem teshivenu. Things like that.
Surely you will,
as he translates. There is a double lashon of the verb. So there are those that Chazal darshan it, meaning something different. They say, no, different talk lashon me'adam, don't darshan anything. It means as it, right? Just what it sounds like, there's no meaning to it. Now, this is a very interesting flip on the head of Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Le'Adam the Rambam is doing, right? Because what does it mean, Chazal, Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Le'Adam?
Don't darshan.
I'm sorry?
Like, don't darshan at all.
Maybe, what you see is what you get. The simple meaning is what it is. And what's the Rambam now saying? What you see is not what you get. Right? Now, in defense of the Rambam would say, no, what really different means you talk the way that humans talk. Sometimes humans just say, Hashem Teshivet, right? They just say it in a double lashon. And sometimes they tell you something which is an allegory. It's defendable, right? I'm just pointing out, there's an irony here.
Does anybody else use it the same way Rambam does?
Sure. But partly on the influence of the Rambam.
Any of his predecessors?
Not that I'm aware of, but I can check that. I don't know. I have to check that. But, I mean, certainly the Rambam has big influence in everything, right? In other words, a lot of these ideas I can see also your faces, like, yeah, of course, the Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Le'Adam, right? Words, again, like I said to you before, it's sort of like saying, like, Shakespeare is full of cliches, right? In other words, certain ideas just get out there because of the Rambam. Right? The Rambam, not only from the Mora, we saw it in Hilchot, the Rambam says this as well, right? He uses the Lashon Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Le'Adam. But if you think about it, Dibur Torah Kol Hashem Le'Adam, that's not what it means in Chazal. Now, the Rambam is very careful to state, I want you to know that I am not the only one who interprets it this way. In other words, where is the Rambam going to look for support? Now this is interesting. Where should you want the Rambam to look for support? Chazal should say to us, you know, like anyone who believes, except for those who say that God is a body. They don't say that. They just say, except for the mean. And the Rambam stops in, you know, corporeally, into the category of the mean. Okay? So, in the Rambam knows that many times there are a couple of Mamre Chazal that certainly imply this way, but there are counterexamples to that. And the Rambam's hero as a support for him.
Aristotle.
I'm sorry?
Aristotle?
No. I mean, that's the rationalist. But who within the Mesoira is going to help us? Is Unkelus. Targum Unkelus is the Rambam's hero here. If you take a look at 127, you'll see here, and he quotes Unkelus all the time. It's very, very interesting. You can also see this at the end of 136, by the way. The Rambam makes reference to the role of Unkelus. But Unkelus was very perfect in the Hebrew and Assyrian languages and directed his effort toward the abolition of the belief in God's corporeality. Okay? And he goes and shows and says how many, many times Unkelus, in his translation, will translate in a manner in which it neutralizes the corporealism. In 128, he says he had an agenda on course to eradicate false beliefs, right? And therefore, he's very subtle. Now, what Unkelus doesn't do, he points out 128, is necessarily give us sort of great philosophical explication to teach us the true beliefs. You don't find that in Unkelus. But you will note that in Unkelus's translations, he definitely veers us away from, you know, any form of interpretation that would imply corporealism. Now, it is interesting, I'm not an expert in this, but there are those who certainly studied Targum Unkelus, and they find it interesting that every now and then, on a rare occasion, Unkelus doesn't interpret it that way. Now, you can't say Unkelus didn't, because it's too, that he believes in corporealism, because it's too obvious in other places that he's clearly directing people away from such thoughts.
How common is it for him to not?
There are many. I don't know. I don't remember offhand. There are a couple.
Yeah,
but in many other passages as well. The Rambam quotes it, but you can see it. There are the various studies. I think actually in that Pashegan one, the guy, you know, posing here from the Old City, I think in there he has a chapter on also corporealism or anti-corporealism in Targum Unkelus. And it's clear. Occasionally people say that there are times where it doesn't seem as clear he's refuting and they're surprised by it. But by and large, it seems very clear that Targum Unculus is very much against him. The Rambam therefore cites him regularly because this is a good thing for the Rambam. There you have affirmation that that we should not believe in such things. And again, I don't want to, I want to emphasize there's no doubt that within the Masorah, before the Rambam, and certainly after the Rambam, there are those who don't believe God has a body. Many, I'm saying, what it might be. But it is a task that the Rambam feels he must go and prove, just because that there are so many passages which seem to indicate otherwise. Okay? So I'm not going to go through, obviously, all of one. I don't see any reason to go through all of these chapters here, because every you get the upshot. Now, by the way, there are various people who study this carefully and point out that the Rambam sometimes struggles in how to interpret these passages, right? Because it's not always like a no brainer to say that it's a corporealism. The Rambam has to struggle with it. It's an endeavor. It's an endeavor, but he certainly thinks he's up for the task. Questions?
I guess I'm just, we've been exploring why he delves into all this, and I just don't understand why it's so important. Where is this? Is it like an influence from Aristotle? Like, what is the influence in Rambam's thinking that he felt such a strong need to pursue this in his?
I think it's twofold. Well, he wants to prove God's existence.
Right.
And to prove God's existence, you need to be able to define God. Right? And the other thing is that, as we're going to see in the coming up, he really, really believes if you think you could be the firmest guy in the world by in your halachic observance, but if you are believe that God is, has some corporeality, you are a heretic. That's a big deal.
Right.
So he's got to do this, and he says a lot of people. Now, I've never had anyone come to me and say to me, Rabbi, I think God is a form of corporeality. But it's clear in the Rambam's time such beliefs existed.
Right.
Are there examples in the Chazal that people get called a kofar or something like that, or abikoros because of those beliefs?
In general. That's the interesting question about dogma and Judaism as a whole, but, there's a whole debate about this. There are those who promote the idea that the Rambam was sort of the inventor or the propagator of dogma. I don't think that's fair. There are Maimri Chazal, and these people know this as well. Obviously, the 10th parak of Sanhedrin, which discusses who doesn't get Olam Haba. What are those people? Who are they? Okay, so there's a little debate who they are, whatever it might be. I'm not totally convinced by all these people. Let me put it this way. Even if there wasn't formulated as dogmas per se, the notion of saying that there are beliefs that are important in Judaism, I think, existed before it. That's my personal opinion on it. You can see Menachem Kalman's book, and he takes a different approach. Although you have to see the introduction to the second version of Menachem Kalman's book. You guys know what I'm talking about, Menachem Kalman? This is a story in University of Haifa, a book called Dogma, Medieval Jewish Belief, and Must a Jew Believe Anything? Something like that. That's very important. Good work. Very interesting. Yeah. Okay, now, in 131 to 136, which we'll pick up with next week, okay, I want you to see, this sort of relates to your question at any time. What is so bad about believing God's corporeality? Okay? And in it, he's going to get to all sorts of issues about the study of philosophy as a whole. Something about why people believe in God's corporeality and in different intellectual capacities of people and educational methods, etc. Okay? So if you take a look at 135 to 136, and in Meretz Hashem, when we do that, we will also have a supplemented with a larger discussion about Kfirah B'Shogeg. I know the Torah threw me off. It's just because I was so from. That's why I believe God has a body. I took this seriously. Are you a heretic? And the Rambam is going to say, yes. And others, like the Rav, are going to say, Chas v'shalom. Well, what's that all about? So, Meretz Hashem, we'll get to talk about that next week as well. Okay, 131 to 136.